The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I'm excited about today's show. We're going to be talking about the value of creative arts in the home. And I want to thank you. Our audience is growing still very fast. We've got 68,000 people each month listening. So thank you for that. And we do have an opening for a sponsor if you have any ideas along those lines. So today we're talking about the value of creative arts in the home. Creative art programs are being cut in schools to save money, and kids are being sucked into digital worlds designed by someone else for their recreation. Many are losing their creative power. What happened to crayons and colored pencils, clay, finger paints, and yarn, what I played with when I was kids? I was a kid. How does the artistic process help young minds to develop, and how can we bring it back into our homes? My guest this week on Family First is Helen Weber, a celebrated artist whose artistic works have graced huge public buildings as well as homes, always with fanciful, uplifting images in diverse materials and a variety of themes. Weber seeks to, and I'm quoting her, inspire the creative spirit in our personal and public environments, and especially in our souls. Weber believes that art can touch the spirit of many more people than those whose art experiences are limited to the halls and walls of museums and galleries. She's passionate about the rights of children to explore their imagination, so listen in for creative ideas for making your home an inspiring place to hang out for the whole family. I'll tell you a little more about Helen's background before we introduce her. Helen has created art for over 100 public sites across the U.S. and abroad. She's best known for her fabric collage tapestries, which I've seen. They're glorious. She's also worked in metal, clay, wood, and stained glass, creating pieces from 3 feet to 74 feet in size. Her dramatic art adorns medical facilities, cruise ships, corporate and community centers, universities, and religious environments, as well as homes. Weber's written and illustrated children's books, as well as designed book and record covers. Working with major U.S. manufacturers, she's created an array of products for the home, as well as designs for children's creative crafts. Weber has a master's degree from Rhode Island School of Design and has taught at colleges and lectured across the country. She's written the book, Catch a Dreamer, which was the inspiration of the film Catch a Dreamer, and she has written and directed the book and the film. The film examines the rights of children today through the use of tapestry, images, and photography, art, poetry, and music. So welcome to Family First, Helen.
Thank you so much. What a beautiful review. Thank you, thank you. I'm so glad to be here, Randy.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a real treat. So I want to just start out and ask you about your personal journey. What first stimulated you to become interested in the artistic creativity field?
Well, it goes back, as it would with most people, to my childhood and a mother who was incredibly supportive of whatever I did in the creative realm, and it turned out to be art. So what happened really when it came to a head when I was about 8 or 9 years old, and this was the time after the terrible depression and FDR, I'm really going back in history now, FDR had a program called the WPA, which basically supported art teaching and art. And in my neighborhood, right near my playground, there was a giant studio with an art teacher in it. And every day after school, I headed down to that place and jumped into that studio and worked until supper time and beyond, experiencing all kinds of media and getting a lot of acceptance and support from the teacher, and you know, brought the work home, and everybody went ooh la la, and I became an artist, and that was it. I was going to be an artist, and there wasn't too much question about it. Except later, when it was time to go to college, my mother, suffering from the memories of the terrible depression, said maybe you should do something like social work or psychology or something where you might be able to get a job more easily. And of course, that is a mantra that has gone down through the ages. People are telling their kids this now, and I want to talk about that at a later point. But anyway, I did get into social work, and I did a lot of artwork with people of all ages, but then I decided at some point I really want to do my own thing, and one thing led to another, and I did it.
Well,
in fact, I supported three children as a single mother at one point with it. So that's sort of a miracle, isn't it?
Yes, that's very good. And I can see the concern for social welfare informs your work. So you brought that into your art. It's beautiful. So what is your basic philosophy about creativity? I know you have very strong convictions about it.
Well, I think that creativity is a seed that is within us all when we're born. We have that, just like we're born with the capacity for language. We are born with this seed for becoming or expressing ourselves in creative ways, creative thinking. That's the real issue is, do we water it, the seed, and does it have a chance to become a plant with many leaves and a flower? That's the real issue, and that's the issue with the schools and the families and communities and the world. How we deal with that wonderful humanitarian expression, which makes us so special as humans. You know, music, dance, art, theater, all of the above.
That's awesome. I love that you connect from the microcosm in the home and the school to the entire world. So let's start with the school. With this budgetary crisis, it's interesting to hear the FDR was emphasizing the arts back in when after we had our last deep crisis. How can art remain a key part of the curriculum? Can you explain your approach to schools?
Well, first I want to battle with those who say, you know, the arts are icing on the cake. And my take on that is, what is cake without an icing?
Right.
The cake might be very dry if we took off the icing, and the school curriculum might be very dry and monotone if we take away the arts. But beyond that, you know, without using that analogy, but going further into it more deeply, creativity is expressed through the right brain, and that's a very simplistic statement. There's probably overlapping and back and forth, but in general, it's agreed that the right brain function is creative. And to just focus on rote learning and test-taking and dull memorization really, really deprives kids of any depth to their education. So when you ask how can it be brought back, I think it's just a question of a growing consciousness and awareness in our communities that children need to have art, and I mean all kinds of art. I don't mean necessarily the visual arts, which, of course, I focus on because that's what I do. But I always, when I say the art, I'm meaning all kinds. So, but since your program is about families, the families can certainly be a big help in introducing and encouraging kids, their children, and themselves, too.
Yes, well, one thing is I hope parents will, you know, urge their schools to maintain the art element. And you had mentioned to me when we talked previously about how the keeping up the creative arts actually helps with those, the rote learning and the left brain kinds of learning, the math and the reading mm-hmm. and the writing, and even that it can help with the brain communication for ADD and ADHD. Can you elaborate a little on that?
Well, you know, I'm not a scientist, and I know that this is a very profound subject with many little byways and highways. So I can just give you some experiences that I've had in teaching college-age students. It became very evident that many, many of the kids in that, my classroom, many of the students rather in their early 20s, who were very interested in art and were art majors were ADD. They had reading problems. They had all the various things that flow out from that. And so I think, in the schools where I hear that 5% of kids are diagnosed, there are many that are not diagnosed, have various forms of ADD, ADHD, and other aspects seem to come under this umbrella. And these are the very, very children that can really benefit when they're so turned off by some of the rote stuff and the boring stuff. And you can reach them through art programs. This is a place for them to focus. This is a place for their self-esteem to be enhanced. These kids have real self-esteem problems because they're failing in school, or they're set apart, or they're punished, or they're scolded, or their parents are disappointed in them. So through the arts, all of them, whether it's, you know, playing the violin or painting or sculpting, this must be a tool that's given to these kids for their learning. So for those kids, it's just a pity. I had a son who was diagnosed with dyslexia, and we realized later that he had ADD before that was a diagnosis. And he was very restless and disruptive when he hit first grade. So what they did was they said, "You can't. We're going to punish you, and you can't take art."
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, well, I don't think people are in that place now, but there may be some little corners of our educational system where that's used as a punishment. But nevertheless, it's an illustration of how just the opposite is true. They should have given him art, especially, you know.
So. Right. Yeah, I've actually some previous shows I've talked with some doctors about this, so that it the arts help the brain develop when they have those problems, and the communication between the right and left brain and getting them up to good same speed is mm-hmm. really critical for the learning mm-hmm. process. And so it's fascinating that you saw it right in the college classes mm-hmm. that they lacked the self-esteem because they'd been overworked on the rote kind of stuff and not allowed mm-hmm. to feel their own flex their own creative muscles.
Well, you know, and that's very, very true for the, you know, school-age kids, you know, K through 7, when they suddenly hit first grade and, you know, maybe they're doing well in kindergarten, but suddenly they hit first grade and they become failures because they just can't absorb that other kind of stuff, and they take papers home that show failing grades and so forth. So the self-esteem issue, I think the self-esteem issue and the sense of empowerment is a valid for every child, no matter whether they have ADD or LMNOP or whatever it is, you know. I think that every child can get so much out of, look what I made, you know, look what I'm playing. Look at the dance that I just did. This is such an achievement. as opposed to getting 65 in your math paper, your arithmetic paper. You know, it's coming out of nothing, making something. I think there's a sense of satisfaction and empowerment and self-esteem from all of those creative experiences.
Very cool. I think there's a part that you're alluding to of actually that they're moving in a creative way too. I mean, painting is a very different thing from filling in a math form.
yes.
And dancing and music.
Hand-eye thing, all kinesthesia, muscles, all that stuff is activated and is to me essential for a development, for a healthy kind of development. But there's another thing I want to mention. You probably are going to ask me, so I'll jump the gun. I think that creative activities can lead, this is not original, but I very much tied into this, can lead into other subjects, connections. For example, let's say you're making masks. This is something that the teacher has planned, and maybe they're we're looking at books and pictures, and maybe we went to the museum and we saw African, different kinds of African masks, and then we come back to the classroom and we create them with whatever materials the teacher has done, brought to the room. But then we're saying, where is Africa? Can we find it on a map? Where is this place? And what is it like? And what are the countries that are there? And what does it mean when we talk about African Americans and so forth? And so each activity will lead into geography, maybe social studies, history, and it has more meaning when the children have actually done something physical and artistic about it. Maybe they learn some African songs. Maybe they hear an African children's choir, which we're going to hear later. That's a plug.
Yes.
So, you know, there's, you know, let's say we're studying ancient Greece and maybe there's a chance for some clay work so we can make our own Greek vases with our own designs. So, you know, it becomes an experience that is sort of seared into a child's mind. It isn't some superficial thing like, you know, a fact that doesn't have any meaning to them, but would have more meaning if there was a creative project around it.
Yeah, so they've actually gotten involved in that same process that the people in Africa or the people in ancient Greece had actually done, and all of a sudden they can empathize with that society, which they may not otherwise if they're just reading history.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Yeah, but by the way, just a little parenthesis.
Yes.
Mask making and African masks in particular are wonderful projects for school-age kids because they can exaggerate and use all kinds of insane materials, and then they can put them on their faces, and then they can move to the music. It's sort of a wonderful, just in itself, a great project. I'm going to run home and make a mask.
Yes, that's a great idea. We're up on a break, Helen,
yes.
And we'll be back in a couple minutes, and we're going to talk about what parents can do in their home to increase this creative process.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe, has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Helen Weber, who's a celebrated artist. Her diverse pieces have appeared in all kinds of public places and many, many, many homes. She's also a children's book author, and she's written a wonderful book called Catch a Dreamer, which also inspired a film which she wrote and directed. And we will hear a short clip from that later in the show. But we've been talking about how important encouraging the creative arts are for kids and how it's an essential part of growing up and learning, even for learning math and reading. They need to have that creative involvement, which can also lead to history, geography, understanding other ethnic groups, and so on. And so now we're going to focus on the home and what parents can do in the home. And so, Helen, what would you suggest for parents, even if the school has, God forbid, dropped their art program?
Right.
What can parents do to keep this creativity as part of their children's lives?
Well, the first thing I think about when I think of that is the parents' attitude towards the creative work that a child or a family member would create. Sometimes parents are very, very encouraging, and sometimes the work of a child is ignored because parents are so busy and they both have jobs and there's a lot of, you know, kids and stuff going on, a lot of pressure and tension. But if the family, the adult in the family, grandparents as well, you know, and uncles and aunts and so forth, are responsive to what the kids are doing, that will make a big difference in letting, it's a message. This is important. We appreciate what you do. So, you know, there are certain simple techniques that many parents already know, but I'll say it anyway. Let's say a kid comes in, look, Mom, I just did this drawing. And, the parent might look at it and not really relate to it very well because it's very primitive or whatever it is that might not meet the parent's ideas or ideals, but nevertheless, it's something the kid has created. And so a non-judgmental approach is very, very important. And you might say, oh, this is really interesting. Can you tell me a story about it? What is this all about? And if the kid has trouble doing that, then maybe some kids might be too shy and not able to express themselves. You might say, look at this corner here. There's a lot of dark black in this corner. Is that the night, or what is that all about? So in other words, you talk about the work and you don't make comments that are negative. Everything is positive, and you find things to talk about that the kid can explain, and so you're saying to the child, this is important. It's important enough for me to take time out of cooking or whatever I'm doing to find out more about what you've created. That's one example. Another example is what you do with the work. And I'm just talking about visual art because that's the easiest one to deal with.
Right.
The visual art. You know, okay, you put it on the fridge. But maybe that's not enough. Maybe you have a wall someplace in your house that you're willing to give up to children's art. And maybe you can create it in such a way that it's a design element. Maybe you arrange it very carefully and put things up and you know, kids can have input. I think this should go here and that should go there. And then people come and visit and they say, look what Sam did and look what Nina did and so forth. And it's really a statement when a parent will give up, parents will give up a wall in one of the places, not just in the kids' room, but in a room that everybody uses. And maybe that's asking a lot, but I think it's very feasible.
Well, I think it makes a lot of sense, Helen. I know many people who go to modern art museums today, they say, well, my child could have done that. And it's true. Beautiful things come out of children. And I have always framed a picture or two of my kids' paintings mm-hmm. and put them on public walls because they are beautiful, primitive maybe, but that's also very popular.
You know, it's interesting because primitive, has many of the modernists were very, very influenced by primitive art, like Picasso. And and then primitive relates to children who create without all the do's and don'ts that we have adopted, and they're much freer, and there's much more energy in their work because they don't have somebody sitting on their shoulder and saying, all tree trunks are brown. Don't you dare make that one purple, you know?
Right.
And I actually had a school principal march into one of my classes and tell the kids how to do a tree, and it has to be, tree trunk has to be brown. So I think teachers are more aware not to do that now, but there is this element of freedom, and I once went into a school in San Diego and did murals with two assemblies. First assembly was the first, second, third grade, and we did a mural in, you know, half an hour, and it was gorgeous. It was brilliant, and no one worried about it, and it was all over the place and explosive and bright colors and so forth. And then when I went to the older grades where social, quote, socialization had happened, they were very limited and tight. And I couldn't get them to do anything large, and I couldn't get them to press on their pastel so that they got bright colors. So that was sort of an interesting experience illustrating this fact that the spontaneity and freedom that children have, we got to keep that up, you know? And I want to say that we have to keep that up with adults, too, and we'll get into talking about the importance of parents experiencing art and how they might become more relaxed, easygoing parents if they let that part of themselves be expressed. You know, the 9-to-5 job, and I haven't got time to breathe, but I wish I could take a drawing class.
Right.
So maybe that's also important and for adults. And there's so many adults that I've spoken to who are craving for that kind of an experience as a relief from the other. You know, the daily routine one.
Yes, yes. I remember I had a parenting client one time who hated her job, and she said I asked her what she liked as a child, and she said art. She was in an IT consultant job.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, what happened? And she said, well, my fifth grade teacher said I had no talent. And I said, well, find time to take an artistic class at night. So 2 weeks later, she signed up for a class. She was loving it. The teacher told her she had a great talent, and she found the way to do more graphic arts in her job. She started liking her job, changed everything.
Isn't that interesting? That's a great story. Gives me goosebumps. It really does, because for some reason, it's in the air, and I'm thinking of doing workshops with adults and doing multi-creative involving things. But because I'm thinking of doing this, I haven't said anything to, but I have had several friends and acquaintances just out of the blue saying, God, they come to my house and they see all the art, and so that stimulates their thinking, and they say, man, do I wish I could have get back into doing that or experiencing that. You know, I'm doing everything. It's so left brain and it's so rigid and it's so filled with to-do lists, and I need to expand. Several people have recently in the last week or so have said this to me.
That's so great. I guess it is in the air. Both my mother and father were oil painters as a hobby. He was a physician and she was a sociologist, but I have their paintings around my house, and they encouraged art in their children, although they did discourage us from making it a profession.
That's the typical problem. That's a real, real problem.
Yes. So tell me something about what the effect on the family, on the children, on the household can be if the parents actually do take enough time to pursue their own creative intuition.
Well, I think that, you know, it could be a disaster if you have a very rigid, judgmental parent. That's true.
Mm. Yes.
You know, who might start correcting kids and stuff like that. But assuming that we have good-intentioned, more open parents, I can't see, I mean, you're a family expert, and I can't see anything but positive, the interaction, bonding, the support, encouragement, self-expression, value. Look, you know, look what Joe did and his standing in the family, and maybe he's struggling with being put down by his older sister, you know?
Right.
The dynamics of the family, I think, can only be enhanced if we drop our judgmental stuff and do more, you know, are more open. If I have a moment to tell you, the New York Times had an article today about the Children's Museum that just opened with a show by a young Japanese artist of great standing. And she's in the art world, but she's also able to be a child and appreciate children, and she just covered that museum with wild stuff, crazy animals and wall murals and everything, and she invites the children to add to it, and there are pictures in the Times showing kids interacting with the actual art, and she's saying things like, a crude or amateurish style doesn't matter, energy and impact do. Realistic paintings has more limits, she said. If you think that way, it's not limiting. So that's a wonderful, you know, I think it's happening all over the world, more and more and more. Of course, New York is an art center, and it's a pretty hot creative place. So, you know, I'm not surprised that they have this there. But getting back to the family, you know, maybe the parents have a very traditional feeling about art, that it has to be realistic, and that can be a big damper, and encourage the dynamics that of art that children create.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense.
A project that I thought would be lots of fun. You know, we're sitting around a table and we start a story. Maybe mother says, okay, we're going to do a story. I'm going to say one part and we're going to go around the room and the story will develop. So she might say, today I woke up and I found out that I wasn't a mother anymore. I was a bird. And I flew to the top of the very tallest tree in the neighborhood. And I saw something that I couldn't believe. Okay, so the next person picks it up and you go around the room. So then you have a very interesting story. Maybe it's a fairy tale. And then maybe we write it up as a family. And next to each, we make it into a book. So the kids get to draw the pictures, and there's the book. And we've come out with a book that the parents and the children have made together. Do you like that idea?
Yes, that's a wonderful idea, Helen. It reminds me when my kids were little, the friendship bracelets were so popular. Kids would weave them. And my kids kind of taught themselves, because they said they couldn't find any good instructions. And they wrote a little book. And we published it. We sold it at the local bookstore. So that was a lot of fun.
Did they print it?
Yes. My husband printed it. He took pictures of what they were doing and had the instructions. And I still have a bunch of copies in my basement.
Oh, that's a good story. Double check.
Thanks.
I approve.
Good. Now, Helen, you've been working with a great variety of materials for decades, and I've seen that awesome large tapestry that was at Ben's gallery back when he had his gallery in Westchester.
Oh, right.
And they're truly beautiful and distinctive, and I love that they're always so uplifting. So can you talk more about what you're trying to achieve with all the color and the healing power of seeing art that's stimulating?
Well, you know, this is very biased because I make my living out of doing public art, but, you know, I maintain that an environment that has art is speaking of something way beyond what that particular building is, or maybe it speaks more deeply of that building, of that space. You know, it says we respect creativity. We love color. Color is emotion. We like poetry. Maybe there's poetry on the piece. It's sort of opening up an environment and talking about the creative spirit of humanity. And my theory is that there are a lot of people who are so left-brained that they, and I've experienced this, they can walk into a room with a 30-foot piece and not see it. But I think they see it subliminally as they rush by to cash their checks or whatever in the bank. You know, it's certainly, it's, to me, it's essential. And when I come back in my next life, I'm going to do all the hospitals and nursing homes in, I'm going to ban beige paint. We're not allowed to have any beige paint.
Yes.
And all the walls are going to be colored, but never, not too bright necessarily, but different colors. And there's going to be big pieces of art all around, some of which the patients will have made and so forth. Because I think art is healing. I really do. And I think I've noticed that in doctor's offices here, the artwork is basically wallpaper, and nobody ever sees it. They don't even look at it because it's the same thing. It's a snow scene with a barn and a weed growing through the snow. And don't forget the fence.
Yes, there's a little bit of a realistic bias in that area of Pennsylvania.
The community is, you know, is sort of influenced that way, but you know, I could see things that are much more expressive and much more stimulating that would not be ignored, that would be part of the environment. And when you're sitting in the waiting room, it might make you feel better.
So, well, I think that's something that parents could do with their children when they do take them to anywhere, doctor's office or a museum, to really not only point to the stuff and ask them about it, but also when they get home, say, you know, what do you remember? Can you do something like that? What makes you, what mm-hmm. does it move you to do? And elicit a response to the art that they've seen. Does that make sense?
Well, it underscores something that is, you know, art teachers and believe in is, you never really just say, okay, here's a piece of paper, draw something. I mean, you can do that, but when you take kids to a museum and they're sitting on the floor and they're interpreting what they see, it's a stimulation. Or if you have something on a theme, or you know, in other words, you give a structure. In fact, that's very essential for teaching art for adults who are not really artists, and I've been told by many people, I want to do things, but I don't know where to begin, and I don't know where to start, and I don't know what to do. And I think, you know, you need a structure to start with, not to enclose you, but a structure to that you can expand on. So I think that's
to stimulate you. Yes.
Yes. And give
well,
you...
Helen, we're already up on another break, but when we come back, I want to talk about your book and your film, and show people where they can find some of your work. So we'll stay tuned.
Okay.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun?
Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
The Total Education Network is the only network that airs shows 7 days a week on various stations. Please go to our website, www.totaltutor.org, for more information about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide educational news and tips for parents. The Total Education Network, the talk shop for parents, teachers, and administrators. That's www.totaltutor.org.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're having a wonderful chat with Helen Weber, who's a celebrated artist with artistic works in huge public buildings as well as homes and all kinds of media. She's been doing this all her rich life. And she's also written children's books. And we want to talk about Catch a Dreamer, which is a neat book and also stimulated a film and is a great jumping off place for children and families alike. So can you tell us a little more about the inspiration for the book and how you developed it, Helen?
Well, it started with the 10 rights of the child, or the rights of children, enunciated by the United Nations many years ago. And, it seems so obvious what these rights are. When you hear them, they'll be obvious, but yet there are millions and millions of children in on our planet that don't have these rights. So it's very, very important to celebrate these rights and do stuff and things that we can think of to help things change so that children, all children, have these rights. So I did 10 tapestries, really big ones, 5 feet by 7 feet and stuff like that. And my husband, Jim Peterson, who is no longer with us, wrote the words interpreting the rites, which are kind of a little dry, so I put the words and integrated them into the tapestries. And so they were shown in 1980 when I did a whole collection of sheets and towels and stuff for Burlington. They put them up in their 6th Avenue building on 53rd Street. And that
wonderful.
Was the... Yeah. And then after that, the project never left my mind. It was woven in and out of my life. And so I decided to make a book about it, using the tapestries and other artwork. And every 2 pages there is an expression of a different rite. So then came the movie, and the movie expanded this idea, the film, which I worked on with, 2 other producers, friends of mine, who, helped me do this thing. It was sort of a daunting task, but it was wonderfully creative. I love doing it. And it involves, 17 different pieces of music and, over 75 different photographs of children around the world. And this is combined with, the art. So there's art, photography, poetry, and music. So, all in relation to the issues of children's rights. So maybe we can hear a little.
Yes, I just want to say I saw an early version, a clip from the film, and it was so moving with the children from all different parts of the world and walks of life, and the music and your fabulous art. So, I just really urge people to get the book and see the film. And yes, let's listen to that clip now. It's about a minute.
This is the African Children's Choir singing, and I'm doing reading the poetry behind it that Jim Peterson wrote.
Great.
It is in their young faces, the question, a moment of light amidst the shadows. Why did we come here? And fly this great distance? If not to surprise you with our vision of Earth renewed. These are the voices most often unheard, the voices asking for a better life.
That's it.
That's beautiful. Yes, that brings chills to my skin. It's just...
choir is so incredible. It's so full of life. It's just amazing to me. I never tire of hearing that. But that's sort of the flavor of the film. And it also, the film ends by talking about four young people who took it unto themselves to take matters into their hands and do something about the conditions. You know, we have a person who worked with Peruvian orphans, Anna Dotson, Kimmy Weeks, who works with child soldiers, and Ryan Herlack, who worked on safe drinking water, and Alex Sander Scott, who developed a program called for medical research for children's cancer. So this is just to put in as part of the film to show that there are ways to react and there are ways to change the world.
Yeah, I liked that, especially that you did have at the end of the film ways the people could get involved, that it isn't just to be moved. There's ways to connect and propel those issues forward. So it's a very powerful film. So could you share with us those 10 rights of children? And they were from the United Nations?
Yeah, it's
committee?
Based on the United Nations. And I'm going to read it from the book. So we took liberties. You know, we didn't use all of the dry words. But anyway,
yes.
Every child has the right to be cherished and protected. Every child has the right to affection, love, and understanding. Every child has the right to enjoy life without neglect, cruelty, and exploitation. Every child has the right to the best nutrition and medical care. Every child has the right to special care if physically or mentally challenged. Every child has the right to a name and a place in a nation that cares. Every child has the right to be useful, a useful member of society, and to develop special talents and abilities. Every child has the right to a free education. Every child has the right to live in a world of peace and universal brotherhood. And every child has the right to enjoy these rights, regardless of race, gender, national, or social origin. And each one of these is illustrated with a tapestry, and it has a very short poem on it. But I don't think there's time to read all the poetry on all 10.
Right.
That gives you a picture of the rights. And we take them very for granted. You know, we have, although how many millions of children in the United States now are living below the poverty level and how many children do not have homes to live in because of the recession that was upon us. So it's not just the faraway places like Africa and Asia. It's right here in our back door. Do we have time? I want to tell you one more thing about how art can embrace and get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Sure.
Okay, well, there's a project that really excited me, and that was in 2009 when UNICEF asked an artist named Ross Bleckner to be an ambassador to Uganda to work in art with these children who are recovering child soldiers. You know, you can imagine psychically and physically how wounded these kids are. And so he went there with all kinds of supplies, art supplies, and he worked with these children. And just imagine, these children never saw a crayon. They never saw paint or scissors to cut and collage. They never, none of this has been, you know, our kids experience that. Even in the simplest way, they have that, you know?
Yes.
So
yes,
this was, you know, UNICEF thought enough about art to think not, we don't live by bread alone. We have to have bread, but we also have to have the spirit and the soul. And he brought that to these kids. And apparently the art ultimately was brought to the United States and sold in one of the galleries, and the funds were used to go back to these children and to support education and medical treatment and so forth. And
that's such a powerful story that children are, that, you know, they're forced to take up arms. They don't even have a childhood where they can explore their own self-expression and
right.
build their own sense of their own internal spirit. It's shocking. And I'm so glad you brought up, you know, what's happening in this country, because there are 10 to 20 million children that are either homeless or hungry in this country alone. And when we talk about art, we tend to think, well, that's kind of a luxury. But for those children, to know that they're entitled to self-expression and to have a crayon and a piece of paper, it can mean all the difference from them just giving up hope or looking for the help they need.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there have been several exhibits of children's work in homeless shelters and how they've expressed their feelings through the art. It's very powerful, very, very powerful.
Yes, that's so critical. And if they enjoy school, if that gives them an opportunity to enjoy that kind of creative activity when maybe they don't even have any parents, to have someone appreciate their expression and output, it's critical, I think. And I appreciate so much what you've shared with us today. Do you have what final thought would you like to leave our listeners with today of how to make art an ever-present part of their family environment?
Well, you interviewed a woman named Dawn Mazzone last August, and she's a friend of mine, and she came with a present to my house, and it was a cutout out of metal, and it says, "Art is life." That's my feeling. Art is life. It gives life to us, and it makes us special. And art can be in many, many forms, and it can permeate all different facets of our life, and it can always enhance it. So that's sort of my message.
That's a great message, but it is. It's life is about energy, and art is about energy, and it just...
Positive
totally
energy.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So how can people find out more about your work? Where can they go to see it? Where can they get the book or see the film? Can we give them
Well, if they go to my website, which is really simple, helenweber.com, and all I have to remember is that there are two B's in my name, one L and two B's. So helenweber, one word, .com, and my website comes up. And at the top, there's a place that's called Shop Online, and you can click on that, and there is the book and posters that I'm selling of the tapestries and so forth. There's a lot of material in there. The film, please email me if, oh, I should go back. The book, you can also buy the book through Amazon.com, so you don't have to go to my website to order it. But if you want to order other things that are related to it, like the children's posters, the posters of the rights of the children, you can go there too, and the book. The film at this point is on a website that's having some problems, so they're the problems are going to be fixed. So if you want to email me at HelenWeber@Comcast.net and ask for the film, I will make sure to give you information about how to get it. So it's my email me or HelenWeber@Comcast.net or my website HelenWeber.com. Two B's.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you so much for being our guest on Family First and sharing wonderful insights about the creative side of life. It's just a pleasure. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you very much. I love being here.
Great.
With you.
Thank you. That's Helen Weber, celebrated artist and children's book author and film director. So please make full use of her talents. And come back next week to Family First.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.